What's up, FC Dallas fans? Welcome to another episode of DTID, the official FC Dallas podcast. I'm your host, Garrett Melser, and it's been quite a while since we had another episode of DTID. And for good reason, it's been a super busy season at FC Dallas, but we're back with a bang. I was joined by FC Dallas defender Nkosi Defari. We had a great 45-minute conversation. Nkosi talked a lot about growing up in Manhattan and how he got into soccer originally, his high school career, his college career that took him from UConn and then to Seattle, and then eventually he was drafted by FC Dallas. He talked about his rookie season that was interrupted by COVID, so some interesting stories from that one, and a lot of stuff off the field. And Kosi's got a lot of things cooking on the side, like his food truck, some fashion stuff, and eventually maybe an acting career after soccer. So Nkosi's one of the funniest guys on the team. There's a lot of laughs in this episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And as always, if you have any suggestions for future guests, go ahead and reach out to me on Twitter at Garrett Melser. Nkosi, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, no worries at all. Thank you for having me.
So let's get to it. You're from Manhattan. How'd you first get into soccer there?
There was a strong influence from my stepfather. He was born in Argentina, and then I believe came to America when he was around the age of like 8 or 9. Albeit being in New York, Long Island specifically, he played a variety of sports, but soccer was certainly a big one and a part of his culture. At a young age, I was even unknowingly a River Plate fan versus my brother, who was a Boca Juniors fan. I couldn't really tell you much what was going on, but I knew like River Plate had to win, and I didn't know the actual gravity of the games, but it was there always at a young age.
Gotcha. Did you play any other sports growing up?
A few others, but never as serious as soccer. So occasionally basketball, from my father's side, also being in New York, it's a very popular sport. I played lacrosse for a good bit and then began to run track actually, but mostly it was just soccer all the time.
What kind of youth club were you in? Was it academy setup or a little bit more recreationals?
It was like divisional soccer. I think after you had to like work your way through divisions in soccer, then there was like premier, and then there was like levels of premier, and then after that was like academy. So I guess technically, yeah, I was at the lowest level of soccer, at least until I was like 14, 15. It was just what was simple and efficient for my parents. I played for the local team in the local town, and just like slightly more challenging by playing a year up because they couldn't really get me to whether they even knew what an academy was at the time, which they didn't. Those better environments probably to play in.
Gotcha. And you played high school soccer as well, right?
Yeah.
Is that where you scored the goal of the year for State of New York? I feel like we watched a YouTube video of that a while back during a media day or something. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was, I think I was 14 or 15 at the time. I think I was 15. It was maybe 2012, I think. But I was playing club soccer with the team that I had left after the one team that I played for my whole life was the Deer Park team. And then I went over to Dick Schultz and started playing for them. But yeah, that was crazy goal. So I was probably right around like a freshman in high school when it happened, but it was maybe like my second year with the team. But yeah, wild, wild goal. Pretty crazy.
It was a bicycle, right?
Yeah, it was bicycle. It was like a back heel before that led to the bicycle, almost like an alley-oop to myself in a way. Not your standard like youth soccer goal or just goal in general.
Definitely a Puskás nominee, I would say.
Oh, yeah,
if it did it nowadays.
at least for the youth soccer Puskás.
Let's get on to your college career. So you played at two different colleges. First, you were at UConn. How did you end up there? Was it a recruiting situation or did you go there for academics first? How'd that go?
Yeah, so when I first started out, I only had a few like offers from Division III schools. I think it was like Plattsburgh and Oneonta at the time, just a couple of in-state schools that could offer me a decent bit financially, which was sort of one of the better things that I needed at the time. I wasn't really trying to play D3, just knowing where that could lead you statistically. I think maybe like out of the stats, out of like the 66-man draft at the time, only like 2 to 4 were ever coming from Division III schools, and I knew that, yeah. I'm not great at math, but like that's just poor odds.
Yeah.
So then my club coach actually had a couple connections with the Connecticut coach. So I was trying to maybe either get there or Syracuse somewhere East Coast, maybe get some better in-state or financial aid. So then I went over to like a soccer camp. So they were like, okay, if you think he's like good, I mean, we'll still like steal your money and just send you to this camp. So my mom saved up some money, sent me over there. It was like my last sort of go at it before, you know, seniors eventually either like start to commit to school, or they just either are not playing school, and I would have went to the D3 one. But I think maybe a few months before going into like 2015, it was probably 2014, I went to this camp in the summer. And then, yeah, I was playing a variety of positions anywhere just down the middle of the field, like the 9, playing 10, playing 6, playing center back. And like the coach at the time, I think Coach Mardocco, had me playing all these positions, and then a few of the other coaches actually started to come around games and watch. But while we were there at the camp, my team hadn't lost a game. We were probably the best team that was there. And a few other guys, actually two other guys, joined on to the Connecticut team for the following year with me as well.
Nice. What did you study? What's your major going in? What'd you graduate with eventually?
I went in with communications.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to study culinary, but you actually have to go to a culinary institute, and they don't allow, or not even, they don't allow, they just don't have sport.
Yeah.
And then I wanted the idea of music, but then they were really only teaching the history of music, not like the ability to play just a bunch of instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also not really advantageous. So then I chose kind of what would be easy or natural to me, and that was just communications.
Mm-hmm. You know. In terms of the soccer there, do you feel like it was a big step up in level? You said, you know, you didn't play academy, so maybe it was the highest youth level you maybe would have played growing up. But once you're at the collegiate level, did you feel like it was a big step up, or were you kind of already ready for it?
No, there was a massive difference in like the quality of player, which I knew I would be getting if I went to a Division I school. There was a lot of guys that just were very good technically and tactically a little bit, but mostly technically, or really like athletic. And coming from a high school soccer atmosphere, it's not very common to be playing at a good Division I school, or at least expected to play. Maybe they just bring you on the roster and then you're just a surplus guy to keep like the team GPA up. But that's definitely not why I thought that I was gonna be there, because I know what my GPA looks like. So I definitely needed to bring the other aspect, which is like, yeah, pushing it on the field. But I still remember my first training like it was yesterday. It was I wouldn't say a nightmare, but it was just like, yeah, almost like if someone threw me into a foreign country at like a train station and you're trying to like find your way home, and it's like, wow, you have no type of direction on where things are supposed to be going or what's actually supposed to be happening, but you're just there and you're watching everything happen around you. So that was that first training, and every day after that I got a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't finish your collegiate career there. Transferred to Seattle University. How did that come about?
So there was a point in time when I went into Connecticut that I wasn't, I never actually had any athletic scholarship. So my first year, I was just like virtually a walk-on, just paying from what I had from financial aid. And then the rest was just kind of accumulated to debt, I would assume. And then it got to the point where I had asked the coach that I felt, you know, I'm about to be playing a lot more. I'm a more relevant team or a player in the team. I feel as if I should be given some scholarship. I personally feel as if I'm a full scholarship player. And then the coach that was the assistant coach at the time, who came in for the assistant coach that recruited me, basically told me he didn't feel as if I was a full scholarship player, and that, you know, other players were better than me, so they deserve the money. I found that to be interesting, and looking back at it now, quite comical. But that to me was, that was really all I needed to hear. So I was like, okay, that's fine. I just have to leave virtually. And then they ended up giving me the money because he couldn't get the guy in that he wanted. So then they helped me out that year. And then I tried to transfer out the following year. And then took my last year to Seattle University, where they did give me the money that I felt I deserved, and even more so the playing time. And then, yeah, I mean, you could take it from there, but we do know what happened at Seattle.
Yeah.
Connecticut knows what happened at Seattle.
A lot of good stuff, but real quick, was it still at Connecticut where you played one full season at the 9 as a striker, right? Is that, or at least some of the games?
Yeah, I was there for 4 seasons. My first year redshirted, I didn't play a game. My following season, I was actually supposed to, 2 days before the game, I was in the starting lineup as a center back. We were coming up against my brother. They always normally played Iona in one of the first 2 matches. I knew this, I knew my brother played in Iona. I went to a UConn versus Iona game prior to even committing, and then, I mean, hey, I don't pick the lineup, but all I knew is that there was someone in favor regardless of what the case was. So then the day before the game, I was put on the second team as like backup 9. And then so the center back that was playing on that team, we were playing just like an 11v11 scrimmage between first team, second team, just a last go at it before the game. And then at the nine, I got the ball, went on the solo run, dribbled like three people, and scored on said center back that was allegedly better than me. Looked directly at the coaches just so they really know what's up. Because that's just the person that I am. And it's like, yeah. And then the game happens the next day. I maybe get about like 10 minutes, but I think my second touch on the ball, just a one-time finish in the bottom corner, was actually my first game for UConn and actually my only goal, but pretty wild because I scored against my brother, who is a center back. So that's really the only goal you need to get all season, honestly.
Perfect. Was there any trash talk to him at all?
He's more of an emotional, caring brother, but I am the one who, like, if he was going to give me any pushback, I would have loved to trash talk, but he didn't. He, like, congratulated me, which I would have not heard. I would have much rather him be, like, nasty about it so I could also be nasty. I probably would have gotten, like, another goal. But, yeah, after the game, he was quite kind.
Yeah.
Way kinder than I would have been.
Hard to talk trash when, you know, to congratulate you and be gracious about it.
It's just like, okay, come on. Like, whatever.
But you kind of alluded to this, Seattle, you did really well there. Can you just talk about the experience on the field there that led you to eventually being drafted in the first round? And we'll talk about the draft a little bit more, but what was Seattle like on the field?
I went in just like as an older guy. I had some experience from playing at Connecticut, at least maybe not in the biggest of games. We weren't too successful while I was there. But at least I had experience in the college game, and I knew what I was going there to do. It was no nonsense. I wasn't going there to get my master's. I wasn't going there to be a good locker room guy, or like I was going there to be the best center back in the conference, and this is what I told myself, and one of the best in all of college soccer. Regardless of how much time I had, I knew what I wanted to do, and I was like, yeah, I don't know if it's possible, but we're going to find out if it's possible. I didn't start for the first few games. I was coming off an injury, and my coach was giving me quite the difficult time, but push came to shove, and then they actually knew that they needed me, and from the moment that I went in, I think halftime at Notre Dame, I never missed a game after that. So,
And then you ended up with the 2019 WAC Defensive Player of the Year, United Soccer Coaches All-Region First Team, and then that led you to entering the 2020 MLS Super Draft, where FC Dallas selected you. But what was your mindset going into the Super Draft? I mean, that's probably one of the more big unknowns for a lot of players, because your life can kind of change at the drop of a hat, depending on you could be selected by any team in the country and any position really. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, according to mock drafts and the agent who was helping me at the time, I was projected to kind of go around 17 to Minnesota, or like 23rd to Atlanta. I did like the idea of Atlanta. I had never been there. I didn't like the idea of Minnesota. It's just cold.
Yeah.
When you're coming out of college, you don't really know too much about MLS teams and entirely their tactics. Coaches love to always ask, what do you know about my team? And then your answer is always like, not really anything. So you either lie or you just say, yeah, I don't know anything. But I'd say I didn't really think I was going to get drafted. I planned on actually going to play overseas in Japan, like in the second division. My coach at Seattle knew a guy, and I was just going to get in there and then just like grind. I mean, do what I've done anywhere I've ever gotten, just get there and grind. And eventually people were like, oh, wow, this guy's not that bad. But until 2 days prior before the draft, I actually had a FaceTime chat with the Minnesota coach, Adrian Heath. And he was like, yeah, listen, man, don't worry. Don't stress about it. You're going to get drafted. I've been talking to a lot of other coaches. Your name's like on some of the higher profiles, so you will get drafted. Where you're going, I'm not sure. Just enjoy the day. And that definitely like released some good nerves. So I was like, okay, at least I know I won't have to figure out my life's plan after this. I can at least get a trial at some location and then I can fight for my spot from there. But it was good to hear that. And then going into draft day was quite surprising because I had no contact with FC Dallas at all prior to the draft. I think I got a text the morning of from my Seattle coach asking that Dallas wanted to see my like 50 yard dash times and then like a 30 yard dash, and we've never done that once the whole year, so I'm not sure why he texted me asking for that. And it was also like 20 minutes before the draft, and I was like, yeah, no, I don't have these times and I can't just go out in the front yard and do them, so tell him no, sadly. I mean, yeah, it's a shame. Just an hour and some change later, I get a call on the phone from like random number. I'm watching the draft on my PlayStation through ESPN, and they're on pick 12, I believe, with San Jose, pick Tanner Beeson. And then 13 is supposed to be up. So then I see like my phone's ringing. I'm not even in the room. A friend of mine calls me back in the room, says my phone's ringing. So I'm like, okay. Not even like I look at the screen. No, my name's not on there. It's in between picks. I answer the phone and I'm like, oh, like, hello. see the numbers from like Texas. And I just hear someone on the other side of the line just go, oh, like, congratulations. And then I'm looking back at the screen and I'm just like, all right, well, this is just not even, one, this isn't funny. And two, it's just untasteful. Like, at least if you're going to do it well. I'm watching the draft. Like, come on. So I don't say nothing. I'm just like, huh? And he's like, congratulations, this is Lucha Gonzalez. We just picked you to FC Dallas with like the 14th pick. And I'm like, oh, okay, no, this, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is, my stream is slow. This is a problem with technology these days. Yeah. I should have just been there at the draft, but, you know, my stream is slow. How you doing? Like, this is great. This is like, you're like my new favorite person now. So we chatted on the phone for maybe 20, 30 seconds. And then, yeah, that was virtually it at the time. And then I started some more interviews and calls with people from Dallas, but that was definitely the start of it.
It's interesting to hear about the like the technological difficulties behind the Super Draft, because like it's all online nowadays. There's no in-person Super Draft. I think that was maybe the first one that was all virtual. And so it seems like every year there's some sort of weird hiccup where someone's like making a pick, but they don't know they're on stream yet. And so they're like, should I go? And then eventually it works out. But it did work out. We drafted you. We're happy you're here. But that first season didn't really work out for anybody because that was the COVID season. So it was only like, man, were we two games into the year when the entire league was suspended? I think we suspended like the day after the NBA did. And that's kind of when everyone was like, oh, shoot, this whole thing is like real. So what is it like? You've already kind of had your life turned upside down just because you went from a collegiate athlete and student to now a professional athlete living in a state that you've never lived in. And then COVID happens. And what's that like?
Definitely not sort of the big Hollywood Friday Night Lights sort of setup that you could be expecting from getting drafted. And then even still fighting through preseason, I was the only one that actually signed a first team contract out of my draft class.
That's right.
That was another magnificent achievement, but still like, okay, I'm only on here on a 1 year option, so I need to prove myself this year. And then the year that in which you're envisioning you can prove yourself, the year doesn't exist.
No leak.
The league virtually just disbands. But even more so, I hadn't received any of my paychecks throughout like all the way, I think the back end of March into April. I was still living in the hotel. I think I stayed in the hotel like roughly 58 days until they put me into like just an auxiliary apartment because I didn't have money to get my own apartment because of the back pay.
Yeah.
And then I'm in Texas, no car, no license. I'm just like a New York dude that normally just takes the train. It's not feasible in Texas.
No.
Anywhere in Texas. That first year I was just like walking to training or like riding a bike to training until some guys on the team saw me and were like, what were you doing? I'm like, I don't know, man, getting to training. And then guys started picking me up, but I was just like walking to the beat of my own drum, like for lack of better words, but genuinely just enjoying, like, I was fine with it. Like, it's cool. Like, it was genuinely better than anything that I was doing prior to the pandemic, prior to not being a pro athlete.
Yeah.
It was like, man, what a really awful, I could use some other explicatives, but a really awful like first year, huh? And I'm just like, I don't know, dude. I'm making at least 60K this year. Like, this is not that bad. Like, a lot of my years before this have been awful. So it was strange because a lot of people were going through it and still are reaping some of the negatives from COVID. But ironically enough, that was still, it was like the peak of some of my happiness to come because playing college soccer wasn't that great. Certainly at Connecticut or Seattle, I didn't enjoy it much.
Hmm.
So at least being in a new atmosphere with a new challenge, I was actually really okay with it. Albeit, definitely looking back on it, my years now are way better than my first year. That was indeed awful.
That's a refreshing take because, you know, everyone typically has the, you know, it was the worst time ever during this. And obviously for a lot of people it was, but for you, I guess, you know, you're getting paid to play the sport that you love. So it could be worse. And you mentioned living in a hotel for 2 months. So I guess, did that prepare you for the MLS's back FC Dallas tournament experience that we had?
Roughly nothing besides like committing genuine crimes could prepare you for that actual luxurious prison atmosphere that they put us in for that 2 weeks. It was...
Real quick, let me just lay that out for anybody who doesn't know. The MLS's back tournament was the mid-COVID lockdown tournament that MLS put on, and where all the teams flew into Orlando, and we're going to play. But FC Dallas, we in our party, we had a few COVID cases that popped up once we got there. And so every coach, player, staff was quarantined in their hotel rooms for a little over 2 weeks. That was pretty interesting. So take it away.
Yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday because the feeling I had when we first landed, it was pure excitement. This is before, I mean,
obviously we had those COVID cases when we landed. That was pure fact. But the not knowing, and I was very excited to just get out there. And I was well aware of the opportunity that was at hand. I knew that a lot of guys hadn't had a proper preseason, and that there would be open opportunity for anybody to be playing. So I was like, yeah, this could be a time that I could be put into a game or two. And then we saw some other teams like even playing some games, and I'm like, okay, yeah, a lot of young guys are playing. Like, if you get in, just be ready. Play the normal things you tell yourself before a game. Then, yeah, these COVID cases break out, and then they just go full-on apocalyptic quarantine, and they don't let anyone out of their rooms for, like, 14 days.
Yeah.
So there was no actual, like, and my windows, like, in my room didn't open.
Yeah.
So there's no actual, like, fresh air. I mean, granted, I wasn't in it alone. There was a good maybe 15, 20 other guys that had a similar room situation. Only a few of the lucky ones had patios that they could, I mean, yeah, that little square space. Once I finally got it, was like, well, it was like a mountaintop. Unbelievable that you could just walk out and like breathe fresh air. But yeah, it was not a pleasurable experience by any means, because this was early COVID to where you weren't even really sure what you were getting.
Yeah.
And the team was broken apart into guys and at the top four of the hotel being quarantined for their COVID reasons. And it was, yeah, to a certain extent, very overwhelming for a lot of people. And then we got to the point where we were just like, yeah, you know what? Can we just forfeit? And we got on Zoom and we just forfeited. Like, it was kind of cool. Like, I enjoyed it. It was like, great. This is even better than anything that could have happened. We were so excited to come down here and play. We want to go home.
Yeah.
So then after, I think, about 17 days, we ended up being allowed to go home, us in Nashville.
Yeah, that what a surreal experience that was. Like, when I look back at that, because I was on the trip as well, and it doesn't even feel like it was real. It feels like some sort of weird bad dream that we all had simultaneously.
No, it was unbelievable.
Anyway, let's move on to some more better memories and better times. The 2021 season, which actually for FC Dallas wasn't the best season on the field, but you had a great breakout season. 21 starts, and I would say you and Pepe were their big bright spots of that season. And talk about that year, for kind of breaking out, you know, midway through the year for you.
Yeah, there was a lot of games where I wasn't even really rostering early on. The team had just picked up my one-year option, but only giving me also an additional one-year option. A whopping deal of just the same thing. But that was honestly all that I needed anyway. It was like, okay, if I can get past this COVID year where I haven't been able to do much, they saw at least like a spark and something. So we came into it, and then I had a quad injury that I even re-injured. So like the summer I went through maybe like 2 months of not being too healthy. And then towards the back end of May, there was like a little bit of a 3-week break within the team schedule, to where Brisson at the time, who was a center back, they were sending him home to Brazil to see if he could get his visa. Mm. And then Matt came back from the Colorado game on crutches at the end of May, right before we had a few days break, because I believe something with his hip. So then there was like no other center backs that were healthy and present at the time. So then it came to fruition that by the time it was, June 19th, actually against Minnesota, that we didn't have any other center backs. Lucci, who was the coach at the time, was choosing between myself and then putting a left back out of position just because he had the reps as a player. But I don't know. Eventually, it was just something happened. Someone in the office, of course, there's always another story to tell. But from my perspective, it's no good 2 to 3 days before the game. Everyone was talking to me as if I'd never played soccer before, trying to prepare me for a mid-season debut against Minnesota, as if it was Champions League final against Barcelona at the Camp Nou. But I did appreciate the love and the love that they were actually putting through it. But yeah, they could have done less. And then, yeah, we tied that game 1-1. I finished the full 90. It was a decent game, but over the course of that, I mean, yeah, I started every single game after that. I don't really think I earned the spot, actually, in that game. It was in the New England Revolution game at home 2 games after, because we went on the road to LAFC. I started, they took me out the 60th minute. We were playing a 3-back, and then we went to a 4-4-2. And then we were playing Revolution at home, to where I wasn't actually in the lineup. And then I forget how it happened. I believe either someone got hurt or we ended up playing like sort of a 5-back, but I wasn't supposed to start this game. And it was a very, very late game decision. I think even Peter Lucene, our assistant coach, came up to me probably about 30 minutes, 45 minutes before the game was supposed to start and pulled me to the side and was like, yeah, you're starting this game. I think someone had gotten hurt in warmups or he couldn't go. So then I went in that game, and this was the record-breaking season that New England Revolution actually put up, I think, 73 points in a year. And we had a game plan of almost like a slight five at the back to where Ryan would sag to where we can kind of limit some of their attacks in the wide areas and like the speed that they had. But we ended up winning that game 2-1. Pepe turned into a different beast, looking like prime Luis Suarez. Never seen something like it. And we actually managed to hold out and get the win, one of like six that we had that year. We either only beat Austin or just really good teams. It was strange, but that was probably the game where I cemented my spot in the starting lineup, actually.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then the rest is history. You're maintaining that spot ever since. Kind of transition a little bit to more off the field, but it was around that time when you were getting your first big run of games that I think you started going by your middle name, Tafara, instead of your last name. Can you just talk about that whole situation, what led to the decision, and what the name means to you?
Yeah, so the name Tafara is just a name given to me by my mother. Rather than the name Burgess was sort of a name that was assigned to us, and it naturally resides from the UK region, England, Scottish provisions. I'm neither English nor Scottish, so you could do the math there to figure out how that happened. But I at least wanted to go by a name that I felt like if I was going to work this hard for a career and like actually establish who I am and do a thing, then I'd rather be on a name that was like given to me by someone that understands and knows me, that actually is here, like given like my name.
Yeah.
Rather, certainly if it's going to be on the back of a jersey. So I still have the other one on my IDs and the government and such, however they go by me. But for those who know me, you know me as whoever you may know me as. But on the field, at least if I was going to build a career and have a name on the back of a jersey, I wanted it to start with a name that I was at least proud of. So I just chose to go by my middle name, actually.
It's perfect. Thanks so much. And then in the same vein, off the field, you know, you're more than just a soccer player, of course. One thing that people probably know about you that follow the team is that you're interested in fashion. Can you talk about, you know, when that became a passion for you and what you see in it for your life?
Yeah, I'd say just kind of growing up in New York is like a natural thing. Almost like your fashion sense has to be either I purely don't care about anything at all and also what people are going to say about me and the outfit that I have on today, or you went to like public school and know that it's cutthroat and that you actually just have to give some sense of desire for your appearance. But then, yeah, from an early age, I was either also like wearing a lot of colors or at least trying to wear something that like maybe my brother had, because he was poor with his money, but he was spending it all on clothes. So that meant obviously I had clothes.
There you go.
So then, yeah, I was just kind of taking any of his hand-me-downs, taking any of like my mother's older pieces that could fit, anything that my dad didn't want, and just putting an array of things together. But then once I finally actually got like my own job and my own money, and then the freedom to purchase things that I would have wanted, I got to sort of upgrade, my wardrobe and dress more similarly to how I would like to. And people sort of see that a little bit on a week-in, week-out basis. I mean, yeah, if I start making more money, you'll definitely start to see more outrageous outfits, because that's how that works.
I'll look forward to it. It's interesting. I feel like in the last few years, there's been a lot more focus put on what athletes are wearing, streetwear, you know, like off-the-field stuff. Do you know where that started? Like, I feel like I remember it, like, surfacing up, but I first noticed it, and this was, like, Russell Westbrook, KD, when, like, they're still with the Thunder. Like, I feel like at the end, they're wearing the Zany outfits and stuff. Or was there a different genesis of that, do you know?
I feel like, yeah, there were. I think the NBA took a good stronghold of it with just like how they have their walk-ins in the tunnel. They don't, their arrivals are different than that of like even a soccer team arrival or a football team arrival. They sort of do just arrive. I don't know, like I don't even know how it works, but they're all just like in a long tunnel somewhere, and they're taking up to 50, 100, maybe even a couple thousand steps through the tunnel. Like other teams, we arrive maybe like together or out of a parking lot, but the NBA kind of, at least for me, had like that stronghold precedent of it, to where a lot of guys, like, yeah, like you were saying, Harden and such. But then I even noticed a little bit throughout the NFL, like Cam Newton was dressing just quite out there with a lot of suits that he would have in either pre or post game interviews or conferences, to where he started to wear a lot of rambunctious things. And then yeah, it kind of just took off from there. I think companies and brands started to realize how marketable it could be. Photographers definitely wanted to get in on a piece of the action, which made everything else possible because of them. I don't know who would essentially deem they started the movement, but now it's again, full fold. Everyone is kind of doing it across all sports as a walkout thing.
Yeah, and I really like that that's become more of a thing, because you kind of get the more of the personality of the athlete, you know, rather than just, you know, who they are on the field, their personality on the field, which I think is important, because, you know, on social media, a lot of people, you know, don't seem to remember that y'all are people too, not just the athlete that plays for their team. And hopefully that helps them treat y'all better on those platforms. Let's move on a little bit. So more off the field stuff, the food truck, I know you've been, had an ambition to start a food truck in the Dallas area. How's that going?
I'd say it is going well, possibly slower than I would like, but I'm a person that if they know they want something, I would love to maybe not rush it, but have it ready when it's ready, because I know it's a great idea and where it will be. But just because it's being pushed back doesn't mean it won't happen. I have the ideas, I have the blueprints, I have the plan. I'm just waiting on some few things from my dad's end logistically, and then a lot of paperwork. But it's a really, really massive idea. I think we're going to bring something to the Dallas area that isn't already there, and sort of a Caribbean elevated cuisine that not a lot of people can find in Texas. Mostly they're normally going for the Tex-Mex or brisket aspect of things, which is great. I mean, that's fine. But it's like pulling up to like a penguin competition, but like you actually can fly. Like I'm just like I'm a goose. And then like it's just like, wow, what's happening right now? So just a totally different atmosphere of, yeah, we'll all be having food trucks, but not gonna lie, mine will just be a little bit better. And that's fine. That's the way it works sometimes. But I think it's a really good plan. And it's probably something I wouldn't have done prior to either playing professional soccer or at least building a name for myself in professional soccer, because it could be done much easier now with the platform and like sort of audience that I have.
That makes sense. Last one, until we get to the quick questions and we'll let you go. The smiley face that you tweet after wins, and I'm not talking about the emoji. It's literally like the old school one, the colon and the parentheses. So I remember that stuff. I feel like it's 2021, but how did that start? Why that? And it's really become a thing that you'll tweet it after an FC Dallas win, and then everyone in the comments replies to it or quote tweets it. This is a really fun kind of thing that we got going on.
So this is, the 2021 season where we were, like I said, either beating Austin or really good teams. We were away on the road. We had played Kansas. Paxson scores in like maybe 7th, 8th minute, doing something that he doesn't even normally do in shooting, but like shooting with his right foot, and it's a screamer. And I'm just like, wow, unbelievable. First 10 minutes against a very strong SKC, and we're on the lead on the road. Massive game. I ended up having, I think, 16 clearances that game, which is pretty ridiculous. I didn't feel like it was that much, but like the second half, it definitely felt like it was that much. We were under it. And then the game ended, and I don't know. It was just like, it's tweet a smiley face. It's like, why not? Very happy right now. It's like we definitely just won a massive game, and we weren't winning often at all, so it was just like, yeah, I can do this after wins, like, because you probably won't see it often. It was just like, I could do this right now. We hadn't won much, and I don't think we won for maybe a good 6, 7, maybe 8 games before that. It was a lot of losing, so I was like, nah, this is a good vibe. Like, winning is great fun. I mean, dang. So I just tweeted a smiley face, and then yeah, I don't know. A lot of people just started tweeting it back or liking it and replying. And lo and behold, here we are like a year and a half later. And then the streets like the street that will need the smiley face after the wins. I only save it for the wins, never like a tie. Maybe if it's like a PK shootout and we win like an MLS Cup, I'll tweet like a half semicolon with like the slanty face. But it's normally, yeah, just there for the wins. But I'm glad that like the FC Dallas streets will feel that for years to come.
For sure, for sure. I think the simplicity helps. You know, it conveys everything you need in two little cards right there. All right, so some quick fire questions. Feel free to answer these in one word, or if you want to elaborate, by all means.
Okay.
First up, best player you've played against?
Bale. He didn't play his best that day, but he definitely has to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
That's just fair.
Yeah, that's fair. What about like the best like in-game performance? Maybe not the best player like career-wise, but like one game where you're like, oh, well, this guy is legit.
Yeah, I'd have to say maybe when we played Mukhtar last year. Like he was definitely doing his thing. And then I had like come off the bench and was playing against him, and I was definitely like exerting maximum effort to defend him. I felt I did fairly well. I mean, virtually at that point, I was already 4-0, so he probably was like, yeah, it's cool. But he was, yeah, he's a definitely a quality player. Definitely finishes his chances more than anything. Opportunist.
That makes sense. He might be back-to-back MVP. We'll see. Next one, like the best player you've played with, and, you know, maybe like I'm going to say the low-key best player you played with, like not one that everyone would, you know, assume right away.
Okay, would they have to also be professional athlete?
Maybe one that people would know. Actually, no. I want to hear what you
hear. Maybe I'll say two.
Yeah.
Maybe one for my boy, because he's actually just one of the top ballers I've ever like seen to this date. And he was one of the people at Connecticut that the first day I was there, I was like, yeah, this guy is ridiculous. It was this like Mexican dude from like Mount Sac in Corona, California, that played like sort of like the 8-10. Mm-hmm. His name's Alex Sanchez, like lefty, short, maybe like 5-8. But nah, I've never seen someone like strike a ball like this, like the way that he could hit a ping, but also like make a ball dip, and he could be fully facing the left winger and he would know that our right back, who still plays in the league, Jake Nowinski, would be making a bombing overlapping run. No look. He would just hit a ping in the air and it would end up on Jake's chest running in our goal. Yep. It was like, yeah, this guy. But we all know players that have a lot of unfortunate injuries and such, so then that was kind of the end of his career. But at Connecticut, I was very well aware of how unbelievable that he really was. And then a low-key, really, really good player, I'd say Ryan Hollingshead. I feel like the streets don't actually know that Ryan is pretty valid.
Yeah.
And it's weird because even, like, I hope he hears this. It doesn't look good when he plays. Like, which is probably the main reason why he's so good. It looks awful. Like, I love him to death. And I remember, like, first couple weeks of preseason being with Dallas, I was like, yo, I don't even know if this guy knows what foot he is.
Yeah.
And I ask him about it, and he's like, I don't know. I kind of prefer, like, crossing on my left but shooting on my right. And he plays left back but can play right back. But I don't know. As just a right footer, I do most things with my right. Like, I'm not better at dribbling with my left per se. Or he just dribbles with both feet and then just kicks it off the other guy's legs, gets it right back, and then he's running in on your goal. And then he's just, yeah, you don't know what foot he's going to use because he doesn't know what foot he's going to use. And it's been incredibly effective since the first day I got to Dallas, and even now with a new team at LAFC, he has just proven that, yeah, he's got multi-facets in his game. I'd say underrated, but if you know, you know, very good player.
That's a great answer. Yeah, because Ryan is one of those where he's very unorthodox the way he does things, but it works. And so I always like watching players like that where they don't do what you expect them to do, but it's like, oh, that was a different way of doing it.
Okay. Cool. We scored, so there you go. It's like, wow.
Next one. Was there a certain player that you looked up to or modeled your game after, like at the pro level, like a certain defender or maybe a different position?
Yeah, it's crazy because the answer is Ronaldinho, and it's just always Ronaldinho, but I'm not like a 10 or a Ballon d'Or winning left winger. But, you know, a boy can dream, and I was always playing in attacking roles as a kid. Like, I just loved the freedom and happiness that he would always play with, and I still always try like to not forget that, because that's the main reason why I started playing, was just because it was like happy. There was no pressure. There was no money in it. There was nothing else. Just like, this is a game and a game that makes me happy. So that was kind of the reason that I loved watching him. As I got older, one for the streets, I'll shout him out, Yaya Toure. He's just,
mad.
If also,
oh, man. What a creed.
Would love to emulate in any day.
Can play any position on the field.
Yeah.
And hit free kicks, carry the ball, box to box.
Unbelievable. Just jogging through the midfield, pushing people over. And just
crazy.
Pass it into the top corner.
It's funny, a lot of athletes or soccer players say Ronaldinho, one, because of the joy he played with, you know, for the love of the game, etc. But I think also he had the perfect, like, time in terms of peaking right when YouTube became big. So, like, the Ronaldinho, like, YouTube comps, like, that was, like, how so many people, especially our age, mid-20s, were like, oh, wow, this is what soccer can be. I feel like his timing on the YouTube platform really worked
incredible.
Out.
Incredible.
Next one, keeping a shutout or scoring a goal? And let's say you win the game regardless.
Keeping a shutout. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, keeping a shutout.
True defender there. What's the best stadium or atmosphere you played in?
I'd say it's between Q2 Stadium or I don't know. Is it Bank of California? The one that LAFC?
Yeah. I think they changed the name. Yeah. I think it's BMO Field. Now,
okay. But
yeah.
That one. Yeah. One of those two, normally they normally get you to where you need to get. I actually do respect Seattle for getting that stadium packed and like loud, for not being able to fill the whole thing. It's actually quite impressive.
Yeah. Especially in the early months when it's cold up there.
True.
This might be a similar favorite away trip in MLS. Let's like take the stadium side out of it, like the city, you know, that you visited.
I'd have to put respects on New York when we play NYCFC, because we get to stay this year. We actually stayed in Manhattan rather than the last time we stayed across the water in Jersey. We got to stay in sort of midtown Manhattan. That was great. I'm also from New York, so I love that. Yeah, it's probably my favorite one.
Makes sense. I was so bummed. So I was on that trip and it was like my first time in New York, and we had like the flight delay on the way. So we got like a total of 90 minutes to explore the city before I had to go with the equipment bus to the stadium. But there's always next season. What's the favorite goal you've scored? This can be youth, college, pro, and let's say other than the New York State best goal of the year bicycle.
Yeah,
I talked about that one.
Favorite goal I've scored? Probably, I think my one against LAFC. I think that one's pretty cool. Just like, we definitely didn't win that game, and it was devastating. But what I was able to do, I mean, both of my calves were cramping like about 15 minutes before that, to where I was like not really able to jump for headers or go on sprints. But in moments, you just do moments. And then like I saw the ball in the air where it was, and I saw Chiellini actually going for it, and that he would probably get there. But yeah, just like, it bounced off of Seb's hip somehow and then floated over someone's head. And I just ran up and, I don't know, like side kicked it in with like the outside of my right foot, just flying completely over Chiellini. And it's just one of those things that like, yeah, I can show this picture to people one day and they'll be like, it's a lot cooler because it is Chiellini.
Yeah.
If it was anyone else in the league, it's like, oh, okay, maybe. But it's a lot cooler because it is him. So, and I think that one's pretty cool. And in L.A., also, like, silencing their fans is a thing of beauty when you're on the road. So.
Anytime you score against a reigning European champion, that's like one you can be proud of. What's your go-to cheat meal?
Definitely donuts.
Ooh.
No, definitely donuts.
This one might be controversial. Closest friend on the team?
I'd say Seb.
Seb.
Yeah, that hurts. Seb.
Seb Ibiaga, center back partner and roommate as well, so that makes sense. Second to last one here. If you weren't playing professional soccer, what would you be doing career-wise?
I'd probably be getting into acting.
Acting. Okay. I could see that.
I have just like a good amount of energy, and I love like playing a role in any way. So if I'm task-oriented and I can play a role, I feel like that, not to just hate on actors, but I feel like that is indeed the job. But I would like to do it, whether it was like either voice acting for children's shows or children's movies that are animated, or just actually getting into full aspect of acting wherever I have to start. I feel like it'd be pretty fun to do.
Be sweet. Could always do that after the professional soccer. Last one, and since you are playing professional soccer right now, what's your goal in the sport, or do you have many goals? Talk about that.
I'd say I have a bunch of goals. I genuinely just wake up every day and manifest and set like the wildest goals possible for myself. Like the ones that when you say them, people look at you like you're crazy. I think those are the best ones. Like playing in the next World Cup and at least getting the national team to like a semifinal. I feel like it would be in dramatic fashion where I probably wouldn't be starting for a few games and then I'd be called upon, and then being like an unsung hero of sorts, that where people didn't know a lot about me but they had to rely on me in a moment, and then I at least pulled through. I want to play like Champions League soccer, whether, I don't know, if I was playing for Fenerbahce and fighting against like a Barcelona and sitting in a low block, or if I ever got to be of the highest quality where I am playing for like a top European giant and we're going up against a team that's in the low block. I don't really care. I just want to listen to the Champions League anthem before the game and actually see how good a lot of these guys are. I feel like once you get this close, you need to just take it as far as you can. I'd love to win an MLS Cup. I think with Dallas, it's very possible and feasible. I don't really go around saying things that at least I don't believe. So either I'm crazy or successful, or maybe one day we'll find out both. But I definitely want to be more successful in any regime of the game, winning like a cup that can actually, because I have a lot of good friends on this team, and indeed that'll be great, but 20 years from now I won't be talking to a lot of these people, and that is the fact of the matter, and that's fine, we all know that. But we can look back on a moment and be like, this team wasn't just a team, this team actually went on and won something, some type of a cup, whether it's Leagues Cup, MLS Cup, Open Cup. So I would like to win at least one trophy with every team that I play on, before I leave. I think that'd be a really important piece just so I can kind of cement my legacy rather than still just a couple cool goals of scoring a karate kick over Chiellini. I mean, at the end of the day, that's great, but I'd rather actually have something to boot about it. So yeah, if there's a wild and outrageous dream or goal out there, I'll find it and I'll try to just accomplish it.
Beautiful. It's a perfect way to end. And Kosi, thank you so much for your time. That was excellent stuff.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you for having me. Love the questions. It was great.